Welcome to Enclave on Air. I'm your host today, Jax DiEugenio. In today's episode, the discussion features Surbhi Sidhana, MD, an associate professor of medicine and leader of the myeloma CAR-T immunotherapy program at Stanford University. In our discussion, Dr. Sidhana provided clinical and regulatory perspectives on the FDA approval of belantamab mafodotin in combination with bortezomib and dexamethasone for adult patients with relapsed or refractory multiple myeloma who have received at least two prior lines of therapy, including a proteasome inhibitor and an immunomodulatory agent. Dr. Sidhana, just to get us started here, within the clinical landscape of multiple myeloma, why is the FDA approval of belantamab mafodotin clinically significant right now?
In 2025, right, we can control myeloma for a very long period of time for many patients, and with the CAR-T data, maybe even call some functionally cured, but the vast majority of patients will relapse. So having more options and options that can be given in diverse settings, I think, is very important for our patients. So with belamaf or belantamab mafodotin, one advantage is that it can be given in the community. So it's a BCMA-targeted drug. The other BCMA-targeted drugs that we have are CAR-T, which is approved after one prior line. And then we have BCMA bispecifics. Currently, they're approved later line, but we just saw the press release from MajesTEC-3 that it is a positive study. So hopefully in the future, teclistamab and other BCMA bispecifics might be available earlier line too. So this would position us into three BCMA options, hopefully in 2026 and beyond, that we can use. Now, for bispecifics and CAR-T, you need to be at a specialized treatment center. All the bispecifics are moving more and more to the community, but they still do require more intense monitoring for CRS and ICANS. With belamaf, the advantage is it can be given with less resources. It's an antibody-drug conjugate, so it can truly be given to patients who can't otherwise access CAR-T or bispecifics. And perhaps it can even be used after that, right, since we are not curing a majority of our patients.
So we can move on and just sort of, we can talk about the study. We can start off with sort of the rationale from which the study was conducted, the patients that were enrolled in this analysis, and anything else you'd like to add about its design.
Yeah. So this belantamab mafodotin was evaluated in two studies, DREAM-7 and DREAM-8. In one of the studies, it was combined with bortezomib and dex, so Bela-VD, versus Dara-VD, so daratumumab, bortezomib, and dexamethasone. In the other study, it was combined with an immunomodulatory drug, Bela-PD, so belantamab, pomalidomide, dexamethasone versus pomalidomide, bortezomib, dexamethasone, PVD. Now, in both of these studies, these were positive studies with PFS benefits seen in DREAM-7 and an overall survival benefit also seen in DREAM-7, which to me personally, I was pleasantly surprised by because it is very hard to beat daratumumab combination, which is really one of our premier drugs that has changed the treatment landscape in myeloma. So that data was very encouraging. And again, the PFS data were positive in the Bela-PD study. The overall survival data are immature. I will say that the one big thing that gives everybody a little bit of pause, and this will have to be worked out in the real world setting, is the dosing and adverse event management. So a big part with belantamab, which is given once every 3 weeks, so and the dosing can be spaced out quite a bit, you know, once patients respond, is that it has ocular side effects. And ocular side effects, it deposits in the cornea, causes problems there, are seen in a majority of patients receiving belantamab. We're seen in about 80% of patients, with grade 3 or 4 side effects seen in about 30%+ of patients. So I think this is going to be a challenge. And the study did require dose delays or dose reductions. But because these were, you know, in a study environment where things are being monitored very closely, and when you give a drug that's FDA approved, especially in the community, it'll be interesting to see if the FDA does put a REMS requirement for these patients to have an ophthalmologic visit every visit or not, and how we can manage drug dose reductions and delays. My one message to any provider that is going to adapt this therapy is, do not be scared of dose delays and dose reduction. Dose reduce, dose hold first, and then dose reduce at the first sight of any blurred vision, dry eye, because I think it's very important that, you know, this is a major toxicity that we need to be cognizant of. It can be managed, I think, but would require a lot of hands-on work for dose reduction and dose delays.
So anything else you'd like to add about the safety profile that you didn't already touch on? I think that was very comprehensive, but anything else you'd like to mention about that?
No, I think the most important part is the ocular toxicity management. And then, of course, to also consider, right, for a patient who was being treated, maybe not in an academic or referral center, is CAR T in their cards? Are bispecifics in their card? Because if they are, it may make sense to hold off on Belimumab right away and actually send them for a consult for CAR T and bispecifics, because we know that for both CAR T and bispecific, prior BCMA exposure does decrease the efficacy of those drugs. So truly to consider the whole treatment paradigm for that patient. And maybe if they can get CAR T first and then maybe Belimumab later, if somebody's truly able to travel. If someone cannot travel or their life circumstance will never allow them to get that, that's a different thing. But to consider the whole big picture.
So moving on, what else about this approval would you want clinicians to really understand about its impact in this field?
Yeah, I think two key takeaways are, you know, Belantamab is a drug that can be easily given but has significant ocular side effects, which can really impact a patient's quality of life. And dose holds, dose reductions, and dose delays are the main method of handling that. And so at any early sign of toxicity, hold the drug, delay the dose, and then start with a much lower dose. Sometimes, you know, we are even able to give these, once they're in response, patients quarterly dosing. So they don't have to be on every 3-week dosing forever. After the first initial thing, especially if they're having toxicity, space it out. Then the second important takeaway is we will eventually have, you know, three players in the BCMA arena. Right now we have CAR T, and then, you know, hopefully we'll have Belantamab, that in the future we'll also have bispecifics. So treatment sequencing becomes an issue. And so if somebody has CAR T or bispecifics on their cards, if they're eligible, then I think that should be considered. And then perhaps Belimumab can be sequenced later if allows. And if it doesn't allow, I think that's just something to be cognizant of. Like if that patient is not able to travel, just know that in the future, that may not be possible or may decrease the efficacy unless there's a significant timing interval. Maybe we have to stop it and then a year later, you know, have them get CAR T or bispecific. So something to just keep in mind. I think the main concern that the FDA did bring up at the ODAC meeting was the dosing, right? The main thing was the dosing per the FDA was not completely fleshed out in the protocol that was discussed a few times at length. And I think that is something in practice. We know the starting dose, but is that the optimal dose? You know, probably not, because people need a lot of dose reductions and dose delays. So I think that would be the one thing I'd watch out for. As we get this, you know, drug in the community, it's important for providers who are not very used to these drugs, who are not very used to treating myeloma, to use ASH. ASH, American Society of Hematology, actually has a connection point where they can connect you to experts. And it's there on their website, and they have other resources that can connect you to experts. So if somebody is not very comfortable with toxicity management, American Society of Hematology has many resources for that to connect to experts.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you'd like today's episode of OncLive on Air, please also consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. And while you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air.